Welcome to Reframed. Join us as we explore the concept of redemptive business in our unique context on the African continent.
Hi, my name is Doreen Zaki. I am a corporate finance advisor at Stadia Capital. Stadia Capital is a boutique advisory firm that helps African entrepreneurs raise capital. We have helped businesses raise just over $500 million in the last 10 years. This episode takes a regional deep dive into the unique nuances of taking risks, specifically in East Africa. Our guest today is Valentine Gitoho, a chartered accountant from Kenya with an incredible international career spanning more than 45 years. Valentine is a passionate advocate for integrity and accountability in organization, and she seemingly worked everywhere, UK, US, Pakistan, India. Valentine's also worked across the African continent, including Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, Swaziland, Malawi, Zambia, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and I think I've officially run out of breath. Valentine, I don't know how we will fit all of your life lessons into one podcast episode, but we'll do our best. Why don't you kick us off by giving us a very high-level overview of your career journey?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Doreen. Well, I am a chartered accountant, I must say, from England and Wales, because that specifies the domain, because chartered accountancy is different in various places. And I was actually the first woman chartered accountant in Kenya, graduated in 1982 and came back to Kenya, and I worked with Pricewaterhouse. It was not PricewaterhouseCoopers then, it became PwC later, so I'm one of the oldies. And I used to work with them when I was in university, and they recruited me, and I came in to Kenya as an expatriate. And I worked with them as a tax consultant, then later on moved on to Diners Club, the credit card company, which I was involved in transitioning it to a finance organization. So it was Diners Finance. Thereafter, I did quite a bit of work with World Council of Churches as a financial and ecumenical enabler. Around Africa in areas of governance and financial management. And then I also worked with the World Bank as a financial management specialist in various countries that included Pakistan, India, Ethiopia, Tanzania, and Kenya. And then later on in my career, it was time to do something, not to be employed, but to actually give back from all that I had learned. And one of the things that I was involved in and was kind of an agency, and that was in 2012, was to set up the African Council for Accreditation and Accountability. And this was because of all the integrity issues I'd come across. And I thought that as believers, if we stand out for the light, then God will really draw others to Him. I've also been involved in what we call Leads Consulting, which is also working along young professionals. As far as transformational leadership is concerned, it's something that we started off also here in Kenya. It's across Africa as well through working with an organization in the US. And we've handed over last year to younger generation, and they're moving faster than we can, we who are the founders of that as well. So that's basically who I am. I'm happily married to James, who's an architect for about 39 years. We have two married children. With awesome spouses and three grandchildren. And God has been good.
Oh, wow. What a great introduction. And I must say, Valentine, you have a very extensive and rich professional career. I'm curious, if you think back, what would you say was the three top risks you took in terms of your own career journey?
The first one was my profession. I graduated and went to England to do my chartered accountancy. The idea was that I come back and work as an auditor with the company that had sent me. But it was very clear while I was there, because of the way the chartered accountancy training takes place. It's not only about your exams, it's about exposure through all the accounting areas. And I realized that I do not like being an accountant. I realized I do not like being an auditor. I like being with people. And kind of demystifying what all this accountancy stuff is and just seeing the value add that comes through it. So it was the greatest risk was actually telling the person, the organization that had taken me there, that honestly, unless you allow me to fulfill this particular urge that I have in me, I don't think I'll be a good fit for your organization. And it was kind of sad, but it was real. And they were telling me, we want you to become an audit partner. They wanted women audit partners. I think at that particular time, there was none. And it was very clear. My path was clear, but that was a risk in that I was not motivated by money, not by status, not by what anybody else wants, but what God has created me to be. Another risk is the Diners Finance risk. Totally loved that organization, creativity. I realized again who I was in that now I was open to general management and all governance issues. And in there, because of the way we grew and the way we truly were an organization of excellence, well known out there publicly, there was political pressure. And I had to stand at a certain time because there was a relational political risk with the owners of Diners and some politicians. And the main thing was that anything that this person owned must close down. And I had to stand and be in that situation where we were running well, there was no problem, but the idea was that this organization must be locked down. And one of the things they did is try and get the cash out of our safe. And I had the combination together with the accountant, and I just refused. And I had soldiers around me, and all the staff came around me because we were praying. We had prayed in the morning. And I had an AK-47 next to me, pushing me and telling me, you must open that safe. And I said, it's not your money. And I'm very, very clear. It doesn't matter who you are. If it's not yours, it's not yours. Just follow whatever the policies are. And the Lord intervenes, because at a certain time, a call came, and it was somebody very senior from the government. And I was asked, are there some people disturbing you there? I said, yes, there are. Could you call whoever is in charge? And the person went, spoke, and they left. That's the power of God. But I wasn't going to budge. If they were going to kill me, but I wasn't going to budge. That's quite clear. That was a serious, serious risk, because of course the organization went down and all the various things, but the people got wonderful jobs because they remained with integrity. And finally, of course, there's the World Bank itself, which in this is on a personal level, in that when it was time for me to go out and work with the World Bank, or the offer came up, I had to ask my husband. It wasn't something I was going to do on my own. I really needed his support because our children were small. They were young, 7-year-olds, 9-year-olds, and it is a time when they really needed their mother around. And but my husband, I remember, just looked at me, heard my story, and said, just go. He was also very, very busy in his career, but we did it. And I think it's one of the best risks ever done, because our children grew up so independently and were fantastic, and have in that they learned something different from their dad. But also the other thing is this thing, which I really, really would like to bring out. When people go out on jobs, away from families, even conferences or whatever, there's just some form of immorality that comes in. And it is very, very sad. I saw it. And I remember even there were attempts on me, but I wanted them to know who I am. And yeah, staying and living with integrity and just remaining, living for the audience of one. In that I am Valentine wherever I am. It doesn't matter. It's to the Lord that I stand for. So that probably gives an overview of how that was. The three major risks in my life. Yeah.
And I think in these risks, you raise some very strong points and you share a lot of wisdom. From your first risk point, what I hear you saying is, you are not driven by money, you are driven by purpose when you are talking about not taking the partnership position in PwC. I mean, to be the first, maybe probably first female auditor partner in PwC would have been something that would have been very enticing for very many women. Even today, what would you say is a reason you didn't take it? Is it your belief system? Is it just who you are? Is it your personality?
Imagine I wasn't a believer then. So I believe it's my personality and core values. I'm one of the people who I realize I love variety. I get bored with one thing. As you have seen in my career path, I'm all over the place. And not all over the place, all over the place without purpose, all over the place in the areas that I'm passionate about. Because I have to live a life of purpose, a life of joy. So I really, really thank God for the people who worked in my life at that time and just showed me, opened up my eyes to see various things and just led me to that life of purpose. Of course, as I became a believer, it became even greater to understand that there is more, because more doors were opened for me to see about the possibilities and the career, you know, the giftings that the Lord has given me. Yeah. And I'm just a bold character. I think I'm very bold. Get that from my father and my mother. It's probably generational. Let me just also say the context at that particular time is that consulting was not a path in the auditing firms. It was that has come later on. It came later on in my generation. Yeah, at that particular time, auditing, which is actually just compliance with government or whatever the government says, that was it. But the whole thing about consulting came later. And that's why I joined the tax consulting arm in Pricewaterhouse so that I can have my variety. And the tax consulting has got that aspect of looking forward. How can we move to your next step? What do we need to be done in order for you to account properly for your taxes and yet also legally not pay too much? So the whole thing about thinking through it, that for me was better. I felt I had more value add to the clients that I served at that particular time. And that's what drives me.
So Valentine, let's talk about the second example that you gave with regards to taking risk. At some point, you had someone with an AK-47 threaten you to open up a safe. It sounds like an action movie, you know, things that we only see on TV. What is it about that moment that gave you the courage to stand and say no? Were you always like this? Maybe go back to Valentine, 10-year-old Valentine. Have you always been like this, had this level of courage?
There is a difference in that when this was happening, I think I was 2 years, 3 years as a believer. So there was something added to who I was. And because I was a growing Christian, I was very fervent. I still am. But that my faith played a significant part in this, because I remember it sounded, and I told my staff, actually, I just said, this looks like the Garden of Gethsemane. Not my will, but your will be done. That's how it felt with that AK-47. But note that there had been various things that had happened before that around that whole area, in that I'd been threatened at home. I'd been told to go to the office and sit in the office on a Sunday morning and wait for a phone call. Little threatening things. They're not little. It's quite serious. But let's say my faith is the one that really helped me stand at that particular time. It was not good because we were locked up in the room. There was staff around me. So if anybody was going to shoot, it was not only me, the others who would be involved. Because it was not only one soldier that was with us. There were others and they were in the whole building. So it's just standing there as a leader, I must say. It's a leader just standing with the staff and saying, it's okay, guys, I'm here. It's okay. We're not going to do anything that's wrong. We will stand. And sure enough, they left. And they have seen what the benefit of that was, because they got their salaries paid. We paid all the people who needed to be paid at that time, the people whose money it was, but it wasn't going to anybody else. So for me, I even never thought it was going to be an example for me. It was just at that particular time, it's not yours. And that's it.
Let's move to your third point when you talked about not compromising on personal values. So to give you a background, my mother worked at the United Nations and she was deployed to very many countries across the globe. I think she went to Cambodia, Rwanda, Israel, Afghanistan. And my auntie also worked at the United Nations, being posted in all of these different areas. And one of the key stories that I heard a lot is just the level of immorality that takes place when people are working away from home. And I think it takes a lot. It takes a lot for someone to stand their ground. I mean, you're away from your family, you're away from your spouse, and we're all human, you know, we're human. We have needs. And so what is it about you that made you take that stand and say, no, I'm not going to compromise on my values, on my integrity? Because it's very easy to get swayed in those regions, especially when you're away from home.
For me, it's not about what others are doing. It's about me. I'm very much of, I don't move with the crowd. When I got married, I gave my oath before the Lord. Yeah. And I am not going to compromise that. So I will stand with integrity in my lifestyle, even as a wife, as a mother, in whatever form, so that indeed, for the sake of generations. It's a serious, serious thing, because I've seen families and generations suffer because of this. There are consequences of sin.
What I'm hearing you say, Valentine, is you make decisions. Your decisions are not based on now. So when you make decisions, it's about looking into the future. It's about what does this decision mean for me 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years from now? You know, and I think that is so deep. I mean, just being able to take a step back from that moment and say, and think, you know, I might be making this decision now. It's foolish. And sometimes we're driven by, you know, emotions and passion and all of these things. But it's what I hear you saying is one key thing that has made you the person that you are today, you know, the level of integrity that you have, is that you're constantly thinking about the future and what this would mean, you know. And so let's move on to risk. Valentine, I'd like to know how you would personally define risk.
For me, risk is being willing to stand up for something you believe in, even if you're alone, no matter the cost.
And then based on that, in terms of the different countries that you've worked in, are there differences you have seen in different countries? I don't mean to generalize, but for example, do you find that people in the UK view risk differently than people in Pakistan? Or would you say people in Kenya have a bigger risk appetite than people in Malawi, and do they take on different types of risks? What's your view on that?
My view is basically when you have integrity in the running of organizations, in the running of an economy, in the running of a government, that's where stasis systems and structures are followed, where there's integrity, then people become confident. And as a result, they can take even bigger risks. But for them, it doesn't sound as if it's bigger risks. It just sounds like it's opportunities. So people like in the UK and other, I'll call them developed countries, do take risks from a standpoint because of how their governments run, things run. For us in the, I'll call them the developing countries, we are curtailed in, as far as risk is concerned. We'd even be doing better because of the issues of our systems and structures and corruption and issues that just make us not comfortable to just run. So a few take the risk, and not everybody is opened up to taking that risk, because the risk of falling is higher and collapsing. It's so sad. It's actually fear. We're driven by fear. And but when you come to the smaller entrepreneurs, because they need to survive hand to mouth, they will do whatever it is to actually be able to get that food. But when you get to what makes the economy grow, we actually curtail it because we don't have the right structures. We have the structures and systems, by the way. We do not have integrity in the persons that run it. And that makes the risk more difficult for people to move and grow the economy or whatever else that one is called to do.
That is so true. I wonder why many businesses don't push back to the government and say, look, we want more integrity in these systems. We want better leadership, because that would, of course, result in more efficiency, increased efficiency in the systems. And, you know, increased efficiency would result in higher profits. And so, Valentine, why do you think it is that businesses across Africa don't fight back against the government and say, no, we want to do things differently? And I mean, there's so many examples where even from buying a house, getting land, building a house, I mean, the number of people that you have to bribe to get this thing done, to starting a company, the number of licenses that you need to get, you know, if it's a business license and this license and that license, and the number of people wanting a handout for you just to have that is shocking. You know, export licenses. So it runs across the board. And I think, you know, I wonder why people don't push back to government and say, no, we want things to be different. Why do you think that is?
It's a culture, unfortunately. I have worked in both cultures where it was less to what it is right now. Long ago, you could hear people wanting to get into politics because they want to do something that is good. Right now, when I go and speak to students or such people in their careers, they're talking about being in procurement or making a quick buck because the culture has changed. And it's those same people now who want to run businesses, who are in these positions. So it is a culture that starts from home. It starts from whatever was put into us in the various governments or systems that were there. I cannot believe it how systemic corruption has become. We never had that before. We never had that before. And it is such a worrying thing. So for me, when I keep on thinking long term, and when I keep on talking to my children, grandchildren, anybody I see on the street, and I keep on talking to them about integrity, even the person who asked for a bribe, and I just say, how will this help you? How will this? We have a conversation around it. It's not, don't do that. Don't do, it's for them to understand. Do you understand that when you point a finger at the government because of their corruption, what you're doing and asking me to do right now is the same. So how do you expect to have a different government if you yourself are doing the same? We are the ones who make this government. We are the ones who walk this way. Your children are seeing. All these other people are seeing. So it starts with you and I to do that which is right. There are organizations that have never, ever given a bribe. I've never. And we've prospered. My husband's company, started off in 1963, since independence of this country. And they don't. Integrity stands. So you can prosper. You can prosper by deciding we'll not do it. If each one of us, wherever we are, just stood and taught another. And every time when we go, it is not saying, no, you cannot do that. But using that conversation as a conversation to bring values, to understand that you cannot be saying, I want to become bigger. I want to have this kind of business. I want to do this, but the government is doing. See, it's not about the government. It's about you. Look at what you're doing right now. Are you doing things in integrity? One of the scriptures I like saying is, if you're faithful with little, then the Lord is going to give you much more. So how faithful are you with this, what you've been given? So it is in the little. And having also worked with in the government, I was a chair of one of the committees in one of the government organizations. I remember, and it's an audit committee, I walk into that meeting and the greatest thing that they want to talk about is the fraud. And they're happy having it like a story. I am weeping in my heart. And with that, what I would do is I would just start the meeting in prayer. It's a 2-hour meeting. And in it, I would say, Lord, just show each one of us what it is that you want us to see. I would mention everybody by name and what organization they represent in order for them to bring their minds back to the focus of what their responsibility is. Because we need to do that. Bring the responsibility back to each one of us. And that's how then we can deal with this issue that has become so systemic in our countries.
You are so right. You're so right, Valentine. And let's just talk about this a bit more. I think a lot of young people right now have seen that, or rather they think that corruption works. I mean, cutting corners, taking bribes or giving bribes, this is how people get wealthy. Because if you look at a lot of African countries, the people who hold the wealth are politicians or corrupt individuals who are either taking tenders, who are either doing things, not in a straight path. And so what our young people are seeing is this is the pathway to success. And so it's really important for us to give more examples like your husband's company, James, who has been around since 1963. And not only is he surviving, but he's prospering and he has a company that he runs with integrity. And I think we need more examples like that. Valentine, how has he managed to do it?
It's very clear as they start off, as everybody comes into the organization, they already know that this is a company of integrity. And I'll give you one example of somebody came in. it's Christmas time. They get, especially for them, they get a lot of stuff over Christmas because it's a way of saying next year, just join, you know, let's do something together. And I recall one time when it's a contractor actually who just came in and came in with a lot of cash, wrapped up in a Christmas gift. And so he, you know, said wanted to see the partner and he was there. So what he did, he brought in other staff, key staff. You model it and just said, okay, thank you. You've come here. What is it that you would like us to do? He said, yeah, just to say thank you. And next year we'd like us to do more work and everything. And he said, oh, so what do you have? And he was told, would you please open it? We like opening our gifts before everybody because the gifts are for us as a whole organization. It's not for me. It's us. You're going to be working with us. And when he couldn't open it and he said, okay, let's open it then. They opened it and cash just fell out. It was lots and lots of cash. And he told me, we do not do this. So put these things back together, go down the stairs and never, ever come back here again. Now, he modeled that. He modeled that around his staff. And I can tell you, like, he mentioned to me, like, last year, December, a young member of staff who had now moved on was offered some big cash as well in for a similar thing. And he called him and told him, guess what? I refused the bribe. I feel so good. So that's it. You model it. Just model it. Don't try and hide it behind this and that. You're hiding it. Satan likes us hiding things. Model it wherever you are and teach at least one more person, if not more. You make it real. Just speak so that we all take our responsibility, personal responsibility, as we move on in life.
I love that. I love how you talk about the power of one, the power of just one person standing. And, you know, when I hear your story about James, your husband, standing for integrity in his firm, given that the firm has been around since 1963, I wonder how many people were influenced by that leadership. I wonder how many architects, you know, have been influenced and now have obviously started their own architectural firms, built their own teams, and from that leadership are now running organizations with integrity because of Jane standing and saying, this is how we're going to get it done. And even if I go back to your earlier example of how you stood, you know, against those officers who came to the office and they were asking you to open the safe, I wonder how many of your employees at that time, I'm sure a lot of them are now in senior positions today. And I wonder how many of those run their organizations in integrity because you stood one person, you know, the power of one, you stood and you said, no, I will stand for integrity. And so my question to you, Valentine, is for those organizations that don't do that, for those organizations that don't stand for integrity, what is the risk? What is the risk to an organization that does not stand for integrity?
It will collapse at a certain point. It can't stand. First of all, let's start because I like starting it with the individual. You, the individual who's running that organization, you who's not doing that which is right, you're affecting your family. I've spoken to children when I'm because I meet children all over, young people all over, and you hear that my father is corrupt. That car you see him driving, it's not his. He stole it. He made a deal. And they know, they're aware. And this time, even with the young people that we have, even a five-year-old can know that there's something wrong. So first of all, messing your children and the generations thereafter. That's why we have inheritance issues, because you have lazy people who don't know how to work. And as a result, you wonder, why and is my organization running? All that wealth that I made through these corrupt things, why is it not standing? What has happened? But you started it. You planted that seed and that way of thinking from home. When you go to the office as well and all those corrupt things, your staff still starts stealing from you. So you're also within your organization, you have that risk that is going on in there, in that they learn from you and they are doing it on the side. And you get so upset, you can call all the police and do everything. But again, go back. What have you modeled? Who are you? And then the ones you deal with, your customers, your everybody that is involved in that ecosystem, they get it. And they also spread. So it's like a cancer that is spreading. And that's what we're seeing today. You're actually just messing up and killing people, their integrity, personal integrity, their value system, and more so your generations thereafter. Is it worth it? And that's my question.
And back to the point that you mentioned, it's about being a visionary. Where do you want to be in 5, 10, 15 years? And I think I would call it a poverty mindset. When you're only thinking about tomorrow, or you're thinking about next week, or you're thinking about next month, and you're thinking, let me take this 2 million or 3 million shilling bribe, and you have no idea how that's going to affect you down the line, or how that's going to compromise the integrity of your business, of yourself, of your personal brand, your corporate brand. A lot of people maybe don't think about that when they're making these decisions. And you raise such a valid point around the leadership. Whatever decisions you make at leadership will trickle down to your team. And so if you're a corrupt leader, you will have a corrupt team. You know, in our culture, we say a goat will always give birth to a goat. You know, a cow will always give birth to a cow. You can't expect an organization to run efficiently when the leaders at the top are corrupt or not performing according to integrity. And I think it's so interesting, and it's a lie from the enemy. And the lie is, this is the only way that you can grow in Africa. You have to take bribes. You have to have shortcuts. But then the lie essentially leads to destruction, which is what I hear you saying, Valentine. This lie eventually will lead to the destruction of your organization. And that's why, Valentine, we don't have too many generational companies in Kenya. You know, one thing that sometimes I do entrepreneur sessions or business sessions with founders, and I ask them, what companies in Kenya or in East Africa do you know that are generational? I mean, we know the Johnson & Johnsons, we know the Rockefellers and all of this, but how many of those do we have in Africa? And I always, you know, pose it to them. And the reason why I do that is to help them think about the future, because a lot of entrepreneurs are thinking about tomorrow. I'm thinking about, and you know, I hear where they're coming from. They're thinking about, how do I pay rent? How do I pay fees? How do I pay bills? It's very hard to think long-term when you have short-term problems, you know, and I appreciate that. But cutting corners to meet your short-term obligations, or to meet your greed, it could also be greed, you know, has long-term consequences. And so what I think is, if an organization is able to run with integrity, I think this is an organization that can be generational. Because if you're able to create a culture where people do the right thing, it results in an efficient structure. I believe it. You have a more efficient structure in the business. You have less money being stolen. You have people coming on time. You have people working, being professional. And in the long run, it will lead to a better organization, an organization that's able to last longer, that you're even able to hand over to the next generation. So, and I don't know what your view is about that. I wonder how many organizations, if they ran efficiently, would then become generational organizations.
You're so right, Doreen. You're very, very right. Because talking about the leadership, and I would like to go right up to the board level, because that's where it's also all created, and committees. It's not only about taking bribes. They may not be in that particular direct position, but it's actually about wastage of resources. And I'll give you an example. I remember running one of these running one of the projects, and we were having our first meeting. And one of the things that I always put in meetings when we have agendas is, what is the exit strategy, which means the long term. Because for me, as far as finances are concerned, if anything, they're receiving any funds of any type, they are an investment, and they must have a long-term strategy of continuing that work even after the funding has ended. And I remember in this particular meeting, we were having the first meeting, and I put that on the agenda. We were all from other countries, and one particular person stopped the meeting and said, how much am I being paid for per diem for coming to this meeting? It was a government official. And it was like, no, let's do that. And then, you know, the chair tried to push it, but it was so forceful that it disrupted the meeting completely. The thing is, you're only there for 3 days, couple of days, short time. But what are you doing with that time? You're messing everybody's time. So we had a break, went, came back with a figure. But I prayed. That for me was my first exposure. I said, anyone who does not have the interest of whatever it is we're doing on this work, Lord, remove them. And we only have people who have got interest on this work and also the long-term strategy. But if they're here for this, for themselves, remove them, Lord. And you cannot believe it. By the next meeting, that person had been actually sacked, and I've never seen him. And a Christian was actually bought to be in charge of that particular project. And we've worked and we did so well together. Also in this particular one, other and others that I've seen, it's we want to go, people say, the board says, we would like to go for a retreat in Dubai, for example, and you're in Kenya. You can do that meeting here in Kenya. You're all Kenyans. And they go there and they're doing shopping and they're doing other things. I mean, what kind of stewardship is that? Using taxpayers' money, using whoever's money, other people's money, for your own personal benefit. It's not even benefit. It's actually destruction. You're killing yourself, because as you kill a country, as you kill an organization, you're actually killing yourself. It's such a short-term way of thinking. And it's a very, very painful thing. I remember again going for a conference again, a training, and because it was also government people in similar training. And again, we arrived, they sign, they say they're at the meeting, and then they disappear. They are not there and they don't come. And I confront them. I said, well, you know, we did this and this yesterday. I guess you may have covered it somewhere else. I confront. I don't know how to keep quiet. I will confront and make you aware that what you're doing is wrong. And then people coming into meetings, again, back to boards and all those, without preparing, having time to read your papers, prepare yourself in order to come with the whatever decisions that are there, or saying I'm absent, saying the last minute that you can't attend. What is that? That is absolute lack of responsibility. You've been chosen for a cause. Do that work. If you can't do it, get out. It's such a serious area of integrity as a person. And it costs the company. There's a risk to the organization, to whoever it is that you're serving, not only today, but in the future, because you are there. You're brought there for a certain purpose. You didn't bring in what you're supposed to do. You're so busy on your own. You didn't prepare yourself. You didn't think through things. It's just because of a title. That's why I don't like titles. You're called. It's not that I feel it in my CV, I'm a board member, I'm the chair of this, I'm that. That is irrelevant. It was what is the purpose for your being involved in that organization, and just do it and do it faithfully.
I can hear that you're very passionate about Africa, about ethics, integrity, leadership, you know, passionate about the potential of Africa, where you see it going. I know over the last 10 years, you've been working at AFCA, AFCAA, which is the African Council for Accreditation and Accountability. What advice, given everything that you've said, you know, and you said a lot of rich points, what advice would you give our listeners?
One of the things that, especially let me talk about like of AFCA that we're asked, is what is the value proposition? And in all of us, even in our work, what's the value proposition of doing things with integrity? Why? And you know, what they're looking for is, you know, will my business grow? So my credibility, I can be accredited, so I'll have a star in there, so people will know that I can get more funding because I'm this. And I keep on asking, what is the value proposition of you being born again? What is the value? If you can tell me, what is the value proposition of being a believer? That's all we're asking. All we are doing is walking along as disciples, as brothers and sisters in organizations, wherever we are, in order for us to model Christ, to be stewards of whatever it is that he's given us, to walk with integrity. Don't ask me about a value proposition. He tells you he's going to give you. You walk in integrity, he's going to give you more than you can think or imagine. But asking a value proposition that is based on the things of this world, we will miss it, because we will not find the value proposition. It will make us compromise. So for me, is the value proposition is that knowing that we are stewards, knowing that we are in this world only for a certain point, time, and knowing that everything, it is the Lord who gives us the ability to create wealth. And he is the one who gives us also the wisdom and the growth and all the ideas and the strategies. He's the one who's positioned us in all those things and will tell us even in hard times how to make money and grow, how to meet our needs. He is the one. Then how dare we turn around and decide that we will not follow what he tells us to do, to be the light, to walk in the light, to be his salt, to stand out and speak for the truth to the glory and honor of our Lord.
My goodness, I love that so much. What is, in fact, I'll take a note for myself. What is the value proposition of being a believer? I think it's so good that you've worked in corporate, so you understand the corporate lingo, you know. And there's a strong value proposition of being a believer. And even as we come to the end of this podcast, I think we should also understand that the value proposition is given to us in the Word. The promises that we've been given in the Word. This is the outcome of having certain values. This is the outcome of taking certain pathways. This is the outcome of making certain decisions. It is in the Word. It is entrenched in the Word. So, Valentine, as we approach the end of this podcast, what would be your parting shot?
If you don't mind, I'll share something that I've just been, somebody sent to me this morning. And it stood out for me in that we are stewarding God's reputation. And the essence of this being that God entrusts his reputation to us if we are corrupt or negligent or behave in ways inconsistent with what God calls us to. We harm his reputation in the eyes of the onlooking world. Conversely, if we behave with love, with justice, with integrity, excellence, we turn eyes towards Jesus and God's reputation is enhanced. What a sacred trust.
Valentine, thank you so much for your passion, your energy, your wisdom, you know, the nuggets of advice that you've given us. We've come to the end of this podcast episode. We are really grateful for you making time to be here. Thank you also to all our listeners who've managed to listen into this podcast. We hope you've been able to glean a lot of wisdom and insights from Valentine and her very extensive and rich career journey and her strong core values. We've learned a lot from you, Valentine. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to serve our Lord in this way. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. This episode of Reframed was brought to you by Ziwani, a community of business leaders who partnered together to live out their kingdom calling in the marketplace within Africa. To know more about us, visit our website at ziwani.com. That's ZIWANI.com.